It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Tina Canfield and Lisa Brown are back.
Hey!
Hey, everybody.
I love that.
Because, Let it be said that we don't listen to our six fans.
Yes. Yes, and our two biggest fans, anytime they say anything, we immediately put them on the show. Was when we were talking about the Mark Millar and Len Wein and Todd McFarlane comments on a couple weeks ago, I said in the podcast, this is probably not good that there's four men talking about it.
Sexism in comics, yes.
Yes. Lisa and Tina agree.
Yes.
But I think you guys did make a lot of valid and good points.
Well
I was
done,
impressed.
Guys. Well done.
I was impressed.
We like women.
Yeah,
we do. Who doesn't?
They have nice soft bits.
And now we're in trouble.
Now we're offensive.
How is that offensive?
I don't like the soft bits.
Squishy bits.
Those squishy are the bits I like.
I don't think anybody wants to be called squishy. No.
Well, Bridget Jones, she referred to her own body as her squishy bits.
Yeah, see? But she was self-loathing.
She was. Yes.
But before we get into that, we would be completely out of touch if we didn't mention that the internet exploded this week.
Bum, bum, bum.
Because of the Batman Superman movie, which I have been... I actually warned on the last podcast, I was like, well, I don't have to like Man of Steel because I don't care about Superman, but please don't do anything horrible with Batman.
And they already did.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, and now it's Ben Affleck.
This, and I don't spend as much time on the internet as people who know their way around the internet. Is anyone saying anything positive about this?
No, I have not heard negative. One thing. There, it's actually trending on Twitter. I had to say that correctly. That they're like, hashtag, who would be better than, you know, Ben Affleck. People are putting like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome.
Like a burnt diaper.
Anybody? Like
literally
anybody?
Anybody except
a corpse?
The two comments I've seen most are the most positive comments are people like, hey, calm down. We haven't seen the movie yet. And then the next guy always responds to, Daredevil.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly
yes.
my point.
Everyone's bringing up Daredevil.
And you know, I was just getting to a point where I was liking Ben Affleck because I really liked Argo. I liked The Town. I liked him as a director. I liked Gone Baby Gone. And I was like, okay, I'll get over hating, you know, the J-Lo dating douchey, hopping around on the Oscar stage Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
And now this.
Mm.
And yeah, like, see, I hate Ben Affleck so much I couldn't even give Argo a try.
Argo,
you know what they should do? Is do Jilloker. J-Lo is the Joker.
Jilloker.
You know who is happy about Ben Affleck being Batman?
Ben Affleck?
Kevin Smith.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I did see the one photo, and it's like a bunch of executives in an office, and they're all like laughing hysterically, and it's just a picture of them. And it says, meanwhile, at the Marvel offices.
Exactly.
And then they've got like a newspaper that says like Ben Affleck cast as Batman. But it's just, so it's like everyone hates this, though. No one's on board
with this.
No one. Yeah.
I've not found one person.
People are bringing up how people were mad about Michael Keaton being Batman and mad about Heath Ledger being the Joker.
I did hear that. A friend of mine from school said that he's like, hey, guys, relax. Remember when we all freaked out that Heath Ledger was Joker and it was probably one of the best casting choices
ever? I think the biggest
ever.
Difference, though, is that
Heath
Michael
Ledger
Keaton and Heath Ledger was a good actor. I've been a fan of his for years. Even before everyone was like, oh my God, he's the greatest actor in the world. Well, I won't go that far.
Too many people jumped on that bandwagon.
But he was capable of playing really intense characters, as was Michael Keaton.
Right.
You know, Michael Keaton did Pacific Heights before he did Batman, right? Wasn't that a couple years?
And around the same time. And he had done, we were just saying with Dave last week, Clean and Sober,
mm-hmm.
which was like a really heavy drama. But I remember both of those announcements at the time, I went, huh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And this, I'm just like,
see,
that's
this, I'm more outraged. I walked into the shop yesterday and Dave Gonzalez was sitting there and I'm like, Ben Affleck, I just screamed. And he's like, oh,
everybody,
man.
It was just this collective, just, oh.
Yeah, being in the store on Wednesday, that's what everyone was talking about.
Terrible.
Every single person that came in was like, Ben Affleck's Batman. It's like, I told When did we find out? Tuesday night or Monday night?
I think it was Monday night.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it was Thursday night.
It was late Thursday.
Because it happened since I saw you, and I was in Wednesday.
Yeah, so Thursday night, I was at my apartment, and my roommates got home, and I said, did you guys hear who Batman was? And they don't know anything about comics. They don't know. They don't give a shit about any of this stuff. And they're like, yeah, Ben Affleck. I'm like, how do you guys know that? They're like,
it's somebody everywhere.
Came up on the street mm-hmm. and yelled it at them.
That's how we learned Disney had bought Lucasfilm.
Yeah, some crazy person.
A guy
yeah.
ran into the store when Steven and I were sitting in the store alone, and a guy ran in and went, Lucas bought Disney, and ran out.
Yep.
That's awesome.
See, that's why I love comic book fans, because you can always find like a gaming business or a comic book store, and you can walk in and say crazy things like that, and everyone on board would be like, yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, that happened. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, it's this instant like camaraderie and understanding that this is an outrage, or we're really excited about this.
A big deal. They not only is the internet a buzz. Yesterday when I was at work, we listened to The Mix at work, and they brought it up numerous times. The various DJs brought it up, and they were talking about it on Fox News. Like, yeah. Fox yeah. News in the morning on Friday was right. talking about
there's
Africa
nothing Batman. Else going on in the world.
Well, it goes.
It doesn't matter about Syria and the chemical attack, you know, whatever. But guys, this is what really matters in America. Yeah. Ben Affleck's going to play Batman.
Well, it goes beyond comic fans, because when you think Batman is the most popular superhero character, everyone saw Dark Knight. Everyone cares about what the next Batman movie is going to be. And I would say most people are probably watching the movie and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even watching a cartoon, much less going into a comic
store.
They
certainly don't care about the books,
yeah.
Yeah, they're not focused on the whole history like we are.
You want to see a really good Batman movie, go fucking read, you know, Scott Snyder from Number One, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There's hundreds of things
you can go buy the Year One or Dark Knight Returns animated movies, or Under the Red Hood.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have this litany. I could name to you 12 different guys who have been Batman.
Yeah.
But most people are thinking Christian Bale was Batman. Now, Ben Affleck is Batman. Ben Affleck is a big, big, big name. It's not like Henry Cavill as Superman, where people go, well, who's that guy? What did he do?
And that's what they needed. I think they needed to pull somebody who isn't like a big name, just like they did with Superman. Why can't we do that with Batman?
Yeah.
Like, I understand if you want somebody older to play Batman, fine, whatever. But there's nobody else out there. You had to go with Ben Affleck.
That's what I keep hearing is that they wanted somebody older.
There was
older.
A lot of talk about Ryan Gosling, Carl Urban.
Carl Urban.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know who Carl Urban is.
Carl Urban was...
He was on Xena.
He was Dr. McCoy in Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Who was he on Xena?
I think it was Carl Urban. It's somebody Urban.
Carl Urban is from New Zealand because...
Yes,
the
it is.
First
he
thing,
was Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, he was discovered from Lord of the Rings because he was
Caesar,
in New Zealand.
Cupid.
I'd be okay with him.
Yes.
Yeah, he would have been great. And have you guys seen Dread?
No.
Dread is now streaming on Netflix. You need to see Dread. Yeah, okay. They put it on like this week. I rented the disc from them like last summer. I was amazed. It's awesome.
Really?
It's like,
I thought about going to
see it. It's total bloody B film. Yes. He never takes his helmet off.
Yeah, which I like.
And it's like the whole story is just there's this gigantic office building, you know, this 80s British dystopian future office building that's like the size of a city. And he's got to go from the lobby to the rooftop, and everybody on every floor wants to kill him.
And he kills
him. That sounds like a fantastic film.
Whole movie.
All right.
I like it.
It's awesome.
You know who I want to play Batman?
Who?
Idris Elba. That's the Batman we deserve.
You want to see an Avengers where Idris Elba is everybody.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
I want like Iron Man's helmet to come up, and it's Idris Elba.
And then it's Idris Elba wearing an eye patch yelling at Idris Elba.
Yeah. And then Idris Elba turns green.
Yeah. And Idris Elba with long blonde hair.
That's what I want, man.
It's awesome.
Yeah, see, I've never been excited about the casting for Batman films, but I've never been flatly, like, outraged.
Like screaming your head off.
Yeah, and it's hard for us, too, I think, because when we were kids... They cast, you know, we didn't know anything about actors or anything when we were kids, because when Michael Keaton was Batman, I was like, okay, cool, who cares? We didn't know who that was. And then when they casted Val Kilmer, I don't know, you're a little older than I am, but I was just like, okay, there's a new Batman, who cares? And even with George Clooney, I'm like, the guy from ER is Batman, who cares? I didn't care as a kid. And then when they did Christian Bale as Batman, now I'm older and I knew more about actors, but even I didn't know who he was. I hadn't seen any of his movies.
No,
so I was like,
either.
Okay, cool. And he did a good job, except for the... right. But now I'm like, I'm old enough now to where it's like they're casting
You're ruining
guys.
My Batman.
Yeah, and it's just
what
like...
What are you doing?
You can't pick... Well, I mean, they must have been sitting at like a table. Probably like several somebody sitting at a table thinking like Ben Affleck.
That's what I want to know. Who are these men... What are their names?
Yeah.
Why did they decide this? Because I didn't have as much knowledge about movies when they announce like Val Kilmer, but I know he could play intense. So I'm like, all right, I'll buy that. Then after seeing that, it turned out to be a joke. So I didn't care who they cast to play him in Batman and Robin, because it's like the franchise was already run into the ground. Tim Burton wasn't a part of it. So I'm like, it's not going to be that dark.
And that's Batman. A great point, because I thought Val Kilmer was a good Batman, but he was in a terrible movie. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's my biggest worry about it, is this is, on the podcast, it's almost become my reputation is that I'm the guy who won't see Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Because I've never liked a Zack Snyder film. I'm not a big Superman fan. Nobody's given me a glowing review. I have no...
He's very pretty.
He that takes his shirt off a lot, that and he's...
Has zero effect on me.
Yeah.
You know,
That's the reason I went to go see it twice.
And I have a huge crush on Lois Lane, but Amy Adams does nothing for me.
Yeah.
So that hurts.
She wasn't...
I honestly didn't think she was that great.
No, and yeah, she's just, she's like fine in everything.
Well, she does everything. Average. Exactly. She's very average. And that's kind of what I felt like Lois's purpose was, just like, why are you here? Exactly. Why is the military calling you? What are you doing?
Why are you on the military base?
Exactly.
I don't get it.
Yeah, see,
at least in Superman Returns, which was not a great movie, but Lois was Kate Bosworth and she was gorgeous and she was constantly looking up at this guy feeling sad and I wanted to help.
Yeah.
Damsel in distress.
So my biggest problem is that I haven't heard Man of Steel is a great movie, and now the guy who's making that is making another one of those and putting Batman in it and deciding that Ben Affleck is a good Batman, and it's going to be the only Batman movie, because you know no one's they're going to wait for it to come out before they decide what to do.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Like, then do we do, you know, does it become Ben Affleck versus Killer Croc in a new Batman movie?
Well, and that's why I was kind of confused at first, and I thought, okay, maybe this is like a joke. Like, maybe it's not for real, because I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that these big execs, who of course are, you know, want to make the money and all that stuff, why are you going to cast Ben Affleck? Like, you're not going to make, I can't see it being this great, amazing movie that everyone's going to talk about in a positive light, like The Dark Knight or Dark Knight Rises. So I was like, maybe this is a joke and they're just being funny, and in like a month they're going to announce the real Batman.
I was hoping they were messing with us like they did with NSYNC this week. I'm so pissed.
Don't even.
Right, so we heard like NSYNC is reuniting, and I'm like, yes. And then
you guys were very involved in the emotional roller coaster.
You don't understand.
I saw many Facebook posts.
My childhood, right there. You don't play with me.
That was my 20s when I just wanted them to shut up. And I was like, I was still mourning Kurt Cobain when NSYNC was out.
Okay,
I'm just hoping this whole Ben Affleck thing will fall apart and fizzle just as NSYNC did this week.
Well, you know what?
We still have hope. It's not Sunday yet.
It's possible with the backlash that they might change course. Remember,
that's exactly what I told Lisa
last night.
Mary
Jane thing happened in Spider-Man. They cast that girl as Mary Jane, and then somebody took like a picture, like an unflattering picture of her, and the internet went crazy and was like, she's ugly and all these terrible things they were saying about this poor girl. And then they pulled her out of the movie, and they said they're going to recast her in Spider-Man 3.
Well, no, they went back and forth. They said, Mary Jane will be in 3. And then she said, no, I haven't been fired, and nobody knows if she's...
But that's what I'm saying, is that there was so much outlash that all these people... And it was ridiculous.
I think it's Shailene Woodley is her name.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm pretty sure.
I googled the girl. If you google her, she's a very pretty girl.
She is.
Girl.
She's very, very pretty.
But whatever
I didn't understand.
Picture they put, everyone was saying all this like crazy shit about how ugly this girl was, which is insane. And then they pulled her out of the movie. So maybe we'll get the same thing as Ben Affleck.
And that's...
The backlash
that's
has been
exactly
so
what
crazy.
I said. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, maybe people are so upset that they're going to be like, okay, he's Batman. Oh, JK lulz. Just kidding, he's not.
Well, because I read something that said he's working out like 2 hours a day to like be Batman already. He just started.
Really? You need to ramp that up. 2 hours a day is what...
I know.
Please go.
A lot of people do 2 hours a day.
Please go on the Hugh Jackman diet and do what Hugh Jackman does, and then we'll talk.
I told that to Dave. And Dave in the store was...
Dave Gonzalez?
Yeah.
Dave Gonzalez is very body conscious, which is why I feel like we have to apologize for last week's, where we started talking about Adam West, and we spent a good 17 minutes talking about...
Michael Jordan and bodybuilding.
Yes, and bodybuilding. And then finally at the end, I was like, and Adam West didn't do that.
Right. We get off track sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I told Dave, I'm like, he's already working out like 2 hours a day. And Dave's like... Are you fucking kidding me? And he throws his arms out. He's like, I work out 2 hours a day. Do I look like I could be fucking Batman?
He did that last night,
too. He did the same thing to us last night.
I was just like, no, Dave, I mean, you couldn't be Batman. Like, you couldn't be, and that's not just because you're Puerto Rican, man. You just can't be Batman.
and you're not an actor.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is, like, 2 hours a day, man, isn't,
That's not.
It's not going to do it. Hugh Jackman is eating five chickens a day.
Yeah, it was like a 5,000 calorie diet, and he's at the gym like twice a day for hours on end. He did nothing basically, but
Henry Cavill did the same thing. He got so
which
jacked.
Is really unhealthy for you. Yeah. Apparently, according to the internet, it's terrible for you.
Yeah, or like, but or they like you're the saying, part. Chris Evans in Captain America.
Oh, mm-hmm. he got huge.
Yeah, and he wasn't anywhere near that big. In Avengers, he slimmed way down.
In Fantastic Four, when he played Johnny Storm, he did not look like that.
No, he was zero body fat.
You know, I think if they're going to cast Ben Affleck as Batman, he's going to be like an Adam West or like a George Reeves, like that big upper body, but the barrel tummy. Oh, like, God. I can't see him.
1940s?
When have you ever seen him built with like a lot of muscles?
I can't even picture him shirtless, actually. I don't know if I've ever seen him shirtless.
I'm
sure they're going to stick with the Christian Bale style bat armor. I mean, Michael Keaton even wore the armor.
So just make him look jacked, basically.
Yeah. Pretty much.
He doesn't have to be.
I've always really wanted them to get away from, because we've seen the bat armor so many times.
I know.
You can't really move and fight in it. I always thought it would be so cool to just see a Batman movie where it's like year one kind of thing, where it's like a cloth uniform, a couple, you know, low-tech gadgets, an unmarked car, no Batmobile, nothing too crazy. He's still Bruce Wayne and maybe has like the gas-powered grappling gun and stuff and maybe a bat plane, but it's like armor and all this other shit. It's like a tumbler and all that paper trail. Like where, who built all this shit? Right. Like, you know what I mean? It's one thing in
a lot of Batman Begins was just having to explain that, like bringing in Lucius Fox but that's and what having I'm saying him run is the Wayne Enterprises division.
The thing with the tumbler, and this is something we talked about before with that tumbler, is like, that's a vehicle built for the government. So hundreds of government officials have looked at that vehicle, looked at the blueprints for that, approved the designs, canceled the orders for it. Like thousands of people have looked at the Tumblr designs in the government. And then that thing starts driving around fucking Gotham City and no one's like, where are the Tumblrs? Where were they supposed to be? Oh, they're supposed to be in Wayne Enterprise in this building, blah, blah, blah. Who has keys to that? Lucius Fox does, blah, blah, blah. No one, you know.
No, you know who said that? Bane. That's how he got them.
Oh, Bane.
But the thing I really don't understand about this Ben Affleck casting as Batman, other than money, how does this help Ben Affleck? Because he's been taking the last 5 years to rebuild himself as a very good director.
A very mature adult, like...
Right. And
who doesn't do Geely.
He won the Oscar this year, and people were saying the reason he won the Oscar is because he pulled himself out of that Hollywood douchebag actor.
Maybe. Ooh.
Built himself as an adult who directs movies.
I have a theory. I have this theory about, what's his name? Adrian Brody, right?
I love Adrian Brody.
The Pianist. The Pianist was a fantastic film. It's incredible. Great story. He won an Oscar for it. He won all these awards, this acclaim. I feel like, this is just my opinion, but I feel like he worked himself up to that point where he got the epitome. He won the Oscar. He did fantastic. He was amazing. And now he just makes crappy films.
And because he does designer clothing.
He reached his peak. He got to that very top. He peaked early. And now he's like, I already won that. I already got my coasting. So he's coasting. Maybe Ben Affleck's doing that. So he's going to play Batman now because he wanted to be Batman when he was a little boy.
Yeah, but the difference between Adrian Brody and Ben Affleck is Adrian Brody...
Has talent?
Was an unknown actor for so long. True. Ben Affleck was already a major star in the 90s.
Very true.
Kind of hit bottom. Maybe not financially, but in terms of credibility.
Geely, everyone.
What Geely, Daredevil, Pearl Harbor.
Goodwill Hunting made Ben Affleck. But he would have around been, like 97, 98.
Right. Goodwill Hunting is a good movie, but he's barely in it. He's like
he and Matt Damon wrote the screenplay. Yeah. And that's Besties. They both won the Oscar for that. And that kind of launched both their careers. And you saw Matt Damon handle that very well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is Ben Affleck was like the white trash version of Matt Damon. Because Matt Damon was doing like really classy, really cool, really smart movies, and the guy can act the shit out of anything.
He became a big action star taking over the Jason Bourne movies and did fantastic.
He's in Elysium now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like Ben Affleck. And he looks good. What happened? Oh, have you seen all the jokes online where it's like Adam West and Burt Ward running? And it's Ben Affleck and Matt Damon as Robin?
That's what we were talking about last night with Dave at the shop. We said that if Matt Damon plays
Robin
then we'd be okay. As Batman fans, we would be okay with that. Because
I'd see no way there's going to be a Robin.
Well, that's what they're saying is they want to do... Maybe it was a Scott Snyder or something or other, a producer or something. I don't know all these people's names, but somebody was doing an interview and said, well, we want to do Batman in the Superman movie, but we wanted the older Batman. He's been Batman for a few years. He has experience, and he's going to kind of come in and slap Superman on the wrist and say, look, you just killed 200 million people doing this. We got to get our shit together if we're going to do a Justice League kind of thing. And that's why they went with like an older actor like Ben Affleck. But like you were always saying, is like they should pick a guy like James Bond, somebody in their 30s. So they're old enough to be believable that they can do all this crap, but not too old that you can't use them for the next five, six.
Because yeah, because that's what I was going to say. What
that's age wise.
What happens with the Justice League movie if it does actually happen eventually? Are we going to use Ben Affleck as Batman?
Oh, absolutely.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless this movie bombs, which it won't, because everyone's going to go see it opening weekend, either to see it bomb or to see it do really well. Mm. It's going to do well no matter
what.
Out of curiosity, exactly.
True.
But that's what I'm saying, is he's our next Batman for the next 4 or 5 years.
And if this movie bombs, there is no Justice League, because Warner Brothers doesn't want to take the risk.
Then let's switch off the boys and go to the women and make a Wonder Woman movie. How about that?
That's something I've never understood, is why we can get, like, all these crazy superhero movies like Thor, Captain Marvel, these things, and we can't get... Like, why did we get Green Lantern before Wonder Woman? That doesn't make any sense.
Because she's a woman.
And when you think
superheroes, you think Batman,
big
Superman,
strong men, Spider-Man.
But you gotta say, like,
but I don't think Green Lantern.
Wonder Woman's probably, as far as like popularity, she's got to be in the top 20.
She has to be
easily, if not even the top 15 or top 10, because she's
the most visible female.
She was on the cover of W magazine, right? The first women's magazine. She was on the first issue, so it's like she's very recognizable. And that's what I don't understand, is it's not like her concept is so outrageous they can't figure out how to do it. They did fucking Thor. It's the same thing. It's mythological.
Right. True,
and I think it's worked in other forms, because we were talking last night about who could play and pull off Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And I would pick Lucy Lawless.
Idris
Time
Alba.
Machine.
Yeah. No, she said Lucy Lawless, which I'm all on board for. Xena.
I don't know who that is.
Xena, Warrior Princess.
Oh, yeah, she's perfect.
Okay.
But they had that whole culture.
She still looks great.
She looks incredible.
It was a couple of years ago, but I was just watching a Flight of the Conchords she was in.
She's amazing.
Yeah, and she's from New Zealand.
Is she? Yeah, she is.
Well, they made all those in New Zealand. Yeah. New Zealand, before Lord of the Rings, was basically the place where they made Hercules and Xena.
And Xena.
Yeah.
Which is why Carl Urban was in it.
Exactly. Right.
But I think it works, because to me, Xena and Wonder Woman have a lot of overlap. They're both like gods, you know, there's this mystical Greek mythology.
They kick
component.
Ass.
Yeah.
You know, she's the right like size and build where, you know, if you pluck out any hot actress these days, they're built like twigs.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Like,
I hate
you
it.
Need
Everyone
to
was
be
talking, like,
built.
Megan Fox as Wonder Woman.
Hell no.
No.
She can't act.
She can't act, but it's like she's a twig. The girl needs to eat a sandwich.
Exactly. I don't believe she could go up against like Superman or Batman and fight them. Lucy Lawless could. Another actress thinking outside of the box, Gina Torres.
Who's that?
Oh, she's a fighting girl.
She is fantastic. She's gorgeous, number one. She has the build for it, and I could see her kicking ass.
Who is she, though? I don't know.
She was on Xena and Hercules as well.
Was she?
But that's what I'm saying, is they do need to find...
Fabula.
They do need to find somebody who's like, you know, I don't know, just not... Like you said, it's not that hard to find. If they've found Xena, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's not that hard to find that body type. It's like, I don't know anyone who wouldn't be on board with that. Like, just don't get some A-list... You know, celebrity. It's
Scarlett Johansson.
You got to get exactly.
Just because she's got the rack for it doesn't mean she's
Yeah, but she's short.
She's too short, and she doesn't have the build. Like Xena's, and I always like this.
Xena's huge. She's
apparently,
tall.
This is something Darwin Cook was saying for when he did the New Frontier, which is DC's like weird origin thing or whatever. It's really cool. And it's set
Great
like the 1940s or 1950s. I'm sorry, and it's basically the origin of the Justice League in the Silver Age of comics. Well, in it, Superman and Wonder Woman have like a confrontation. The first time you see them together, Wonder Woman's standing on like a table in Vietnam, and she rescued all these like female prisoners. She's like holding a sword and drinking with all these women. And Superman comes in to say like, hey, there's a bunch of dead soldiers out here. What the hell happened? And she kneels down on the table, and you know, he's standing next to her. And then they get in an argument, and she basically tells Superman, look, these women were being used as cattle by the men. I fucking freed them. Put all the guns in a clearing and let the women do whatever they wanted to the guys. And they picked up the guns and murdered everybody. And that's justice. He's like, that's not the way we do things or whatever. So then she climbs off the table and she's like 3 inches taller than Superman. Yeah. And she's like, there's the door, spaceman, and kicks him out of the place they're in. And it's like,
I love
she
Woman.
Should be taller than him. She should
she's
be.
She's an Amazon. She's
an
beefy.
Amazon. Amazons are beefy gals. Think of Big Barda, okay?
She I love should
Big
be Barda. Taller.
Big
and
Barda
I guess
was amazing.
He got a lot of flack for it. Like, I guess he did an interview or something. He was like, you know, that's the biggest complaint people had about New Frontier is a lot of guys can't abide by a woman
taller bad.
Than Superman. And I was deal like, with no,
that is ridiculous.
She should be. She
so
be.
Says the 5 foot two girl.
Right, yeah. Tina, who's barely up to my shoulder, and I'm a short guy. But it's like, I think that's perfect. I mean, she should be, you know, you don't want her looking like, you know, Schwarzenegger or something. You know what
no,
I'm saying?
No, no.
Like, you don't, but it's like, she can be a big, tall, powerful girl and like,
Xena.
Sure, why can't she be taller than Henry Cavill? Like, cast somebody, have some balls and do that, you know?
My whole problem with the Wonder Woman movie, I just keep coming back to the same thought that if Joss Whedon can't get a Wonder Woman movie made,
right,
it ain't getting made.
I know. Maybe I think we talked about this before on the podcast. Whoever canceled Joss Whedon's Wonder Woman project is out of a fucking job right now because they fucking gave him to Marvel. That's what they did. Yeah. They gave him to Marvel and they made Avengers. And it's just like Wonder Woman could have been a huge, huge movie had they just let him do it the way he wanted to.
And not only did they get Avengers, but they got Avengers 2 and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they got him working on everything.
Yep. Yeah, he's probably going to oversee and direct behind the scenes, kind of godfather everything and like Christopher Nolan's doing.
Well, that's what he's doing. He's,
Superman.
Yeah, he's hired for Phase 2.
Yep.
So
it's like, okay,
so he's weighing in on Winter Soldier and Thor Dark World and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
He's and Iron Man 3. Yeah. He took a look at Iron Man 3.
He's in the room when they're talking about what they want to do next.
Right.
And that easily could have been, instead of, you know, when you want to do Green Lantern, that's fine. I get Geoff Johns did a lot of things to make him big. But, like, why isn't Wonder Woman getting the push? Like, they did that animated movie. I think it was just called Wonder Woman. And it's one of the best DC animated movies. And it's, like, it's not hard to build up a credible threat when you've got all these crazy gods running around, like Ares and everything. It's just, like, I just don't understand why it's... Yeah. Why is it so hard to get this shit, like, together on this?
Well, that's what always amazes me when I watch the DC animated DVDs, is they nail it, and they make it feel like a movie that's accessible to new people.
Yeah,
it's animated. But when I look at, like, Green Lantern First Flight, that should have been the Ryan Reynolds screenplay.
That was a better Green Lantern movie.
It was so straight ahead. It was like, within the first 5 minutes, he gets the ring, he finds out the ring has powers, aliens show up, and they go, now you have to learn how to use a ring.
Yeah.
And he's paired with Sinestro. Sinestro turns evil, he fights Sinestro. Very simple story. And then the Ryan Reynolds movie is like, well, I got three brothers, and I got a girlfriend, and I got this balding guy that went to school with me for some reason.
Yeah.
And
yeah, this guy who's clearly 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
We were in high school together.
Whose father is his age.
Yeah, that was a weird movie.
It was such a mess because it just felt like Warner Brothers was just throwing everything in because they didn't know why Iron Man worked, but they wanted Green Lantern to be Iron Man.
And there's no reason why it couldn't have been. And that's something, who's the guy everyone wanted? Nathan Fillion? I've changed my mind on this guy.
I don't know why you're anti-Nathan Fillion.
I'm an anti-Nathan Fillion person. He's the Serenity guy. I don't know if you guys know who this is. Mom and Dad watched that Castle
Firefly
show with him.
Oh, I hate that guy.
Me too.
I hate that guy.
But.
Maybe it's Castle. I've never seen Castle.
Changed my opinion on him.
He's in Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, he's
good
on Dr. Horrible.
Yes, he plays the hammer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know what changed my mind on him? Is I was watching that Justice League Doom, and he voices Green Lantern. Have you seen that?
Yes, I watched it. That was really good.
There's this part where they're chasing like the Loyal Flush Gang, and Green Lantern's flying after this girl on a playing card, and she's like, you'll never catch me, Lantern. He's like, lots of girls say that. Which is a great Green Lantern line. Yes. And then he's got like a gun, like a green energy gun, and she's flying, and he goes, bang. And then like the bullet shoots, and it's just like that whole sequence was like perfect.
It was fantastic.
Then they catch everybody, and then the guy's like, one of the Loyal Flush Gang guys, he's like, I want a lawyer. He's like, you're getting ahead of yourself. First you want a doctor, then you want a lawyer. And it's like he nailed it, and he's done Green Lantern a few times.
He's also Steve Trevor in the Wonder Woman animated movie.
But
the scene where he tries to get Diana drunk, and then he just gets wasted,
amazing. That would be perfect, so it's too late to make him Green Lantern, but make him Steve Trevor and do a scene like that where it's like he tries to be like the classic buff, like male
macho
guy, and then she drinks him under the table. And it's just like, that's what I want in a Wonder Woman movie, is just to like have some real balls and just make that movie that's gonna fly in the face of all your expectations, where everyone thinks, oh yeah, she's gonna need saving from Steve Trevor and all this crap. No. She just do the Superman movie, but make Wonder Woman, Superman. You know what I'm saying? It just
makes Steve Trevor Lois.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Because that's what he is in the comics now. Yes. That's how they write
him. Make him kind of an idiot that gets into trouble way over his head and's got to be rescued. And like
by
Wonder
a woman.
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's like, that would be awesome. That would be
so
good.
Like, dream casting in that, Brian Azzarello is God of War.
I would love that.
Brian Azzarello?
Really? Yes. Brian Azzarello?
They drew the artist of the comic.
It's him. War.
Drew in God of War.
Monthly?
Yes.
So Chang's drawing him?
I don't know.
Chang's doing
Yeah, he deliberately...
I've only read the first issue.
Writing it.
Yes, Brian Azzarello's writing it, but if you pull up a picture of War from the New 52 Wonder Woman and you put it next to Brian Azzarello, it is the same person.
Well, because they referenced it at C2E2. They did. And Azzarello's like, yeah, he's real funny, isn't he? Real funny, you know? And he's all like...
We met him...
curmudgeon-y.
At C2E2, like the first
year. Brian Azzarello?
Yeah. Matt knows everybody because Matt's a social butterfly. So we're outside, and I do not know what Brian Azzarello looks like at the time.
He looks like a scraggly old man.
And it's raining, and Matt's smoking. We're all smoking cigarettes because Matt smokes. Brian Azzarello's here smoking. And Matt's like, oh, here. He introduces me to him. He says, this is Brian. Brian, this is my friend Steven. He owns a comic book store. And then I'm thinking, like, who the fuck is this guy? This fucking, like, who? I don't care who this fucking bald fucking guy is. What do I care, Matt? So get the fuck out of here. And then he's like, and this is his business partner, Carmelo. And Carm goes, hey, pal, how's it going? And sticks his hand out. Brian Azzarello doesn't even take his hand. He looks down his hand and he cocks an eyebrow. He says, pal, throws his cigarette in the ground and walks away. And
that's why I love Brian
Azzarello. I love him.
I was like, Matt, who the fuck was that douchebag that just walked away? He's like, duh, that was Brian Azzarello. I'm like, oh, fuck. Well, there goes any chance of getting a signing, like, right out the door.
Oh, my God.
Because I know he's married or dating Jill Thompson. I know what she looks like because we went to the same school and her, like, photo and her art and everywhere and Scary Godmother is, like, based off her.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew her when I saw her in the bar and she was talking to him. I'm like, who's that guy Jill Thompson's talking to? And then later I'm like, fucking Brian Azzarello. So, but it's cool that he's got war in that. That's
he
awesome.
It's the same person. I will show you a picture.
I love his sense of humor.
It's fantastic.
But you know what? Since we're talking about Wonder Woman, this is probably the perfect segue to talk about why we came in here.
Yes!
A half an hour ago.
Sexism in comics.
Now, Steven and I talked a lot about it before, but you two as comic reading women. What do you think about the comments made, and how do you feel that the comics industry treats people like you?
Well, we had this discussion this morning when we were just getting ready to come here and stuff, and we talked about which comments are we referring to?
I would like to start with Mark.
Okay.
Mark.
Okay, so
Mark.
Okay.
I remember when Wanted first came out. And Steven was all hyped about it. He's like, oh, my God, this is going to be so cool. Like, it's going to be something completely different. So I picked up the book, and I started reading it. My brother Michael was reading it as well. I think I lasted probably 4 issues.
Yeah,
I was like, this is messed up. I cannot read this.
Yeah.
Okay, little bit of background about me. I'm a mental health counselor specializing in domestic violence. So
you'd like to counsel Mark Millar?
No, I don't. I would refer him out.
Maybe to an inpatient place.
The way he treats women in his comic books, it's, you know, he made the comment that rape is equivalent to decapitation.
Right.
Okay, 1 in 6 women are raped. That's a fact. They're sexually assaulted.
How many people are decapitated
every 2 minutes? Every 2 minutes in the United States of America, someone is sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
Could not find any statistics on beheading.
There was that guy in Brazil, was it? Who was the
but
soccer
that's, is Brazil a second or third world country? Besides, it's not America. Right.
It's not a great place to be.
It's not a common... Days. That's why it makes headlines, and every rape doesn't make headlines, because there's too many rapes. When decapitation happens, it makes a headline, because
deal.
It never fucking happens.
Yeah. It's hard to decapitate somebody.
And it's really
honestly, if you make a deep enough cut in someone's neck, they're already dead. If you decapitate them, you got to work at it.
Yep. You are really trying.
Probably, unless you're a professional executor, which they don't have those anymore, like the guys who cut heads off, those people.
Code.
They don't have those anymore. Unless you do that for a job or you're a lumberjack.
Well, that was so hard to do. They had to invent a machine
that
dropped a razor blade from 15 feet above you.
It didn't always work.
And it didn't always work.
And it didn't always kill you right away.
Exactly. Right. They had to drop it a couple times to make sure to get that.
So what we're saying is decapitation's not common.
It's not common.
It's not common. It's hard to do. And it's certainly not just as bad as rape.
No.
Like,
fuck you.
Because that shit doesn't happen anymore.
I think you're exploiting women because I've sat across and listened to women's accounts. I couldn't even give you a number. Probably at least, I'd say close to 20 women I've talked to have been raped. I've counseled them for years. It doesn't go away. It's always with them. Scars heal. That's fine. But I could tell you stories that would give you nightmares, because I've had nightmares just listening to these women, not alone seeing it. So when I come across rape in a comic book, it's really hard for me to read it. I've dropped a lot of Millar's stuff because I cannot get behind that dark place that he goes. It's not funny. It's not...
It's not entertainment.
It's not for shock value. You know, it's... I read comic books because I like superheroes. I like going back to childhood and hearing like awesome heroic stories and tales and the colors. And I cannot read books where there's rape. You know, it was hard for me to read about Michonne's rape in Walking Dead.
Which is something we really talked about because I'm a huge Walking Dead fan and I love Kirkman. And that was one of the hardest things that I've had to read. And I read a lot of depressing things because I am an out-of-work history teacher. And I spent a lot of my time in school doing lesson plans and stuff talking about genocide. I taught about the Rwandan genocide. I taught about the Holocaust. I taught about, you know, the use of rape. Oh my God. The use of rape as a weapon of
if
war.
If you say it like I'm a FUD, it kind of undercuts your argument.
Kind of undercuts.
We're going to talk about rape now.
I apparently have a speech impediment today.
Oh, we just allowed Quipke into the
Quipke. But anyway, so I mean, yeah, I read a lot of depressing things. I talk about it in classrooms and stuff like that. But reading Michonne's was really difficult to get through because you're not, it's not that you're seeing the whole thing, but you are seeing it. You're seeing parts of it. But the difference I feel between what Kirkman does versus what Mark apparently does is that Kirkman is doing it not for the shock value. He's not trying to shock you. He's not trying to, you know, get to that, oh my God, what can I do now? He was making a point. He was showing just how absolutely evil and disgusting the governor is. And that is something, that's a legitimate thing. Okay, it is the end of the world. It is the apocalypse. There's no government. There's no law. There's no nothing. There's a good chance there's disgusting guys running around doing whatever they want to women. And this is a big possibility. It's a possibility in today's world. It's a possibility.
Certainly, yeah.
And the apocalypse. So I feel what he did was to really show this is what could happen. And the difference is he doesn't go too graphic about it. Yes, it's difficult to read. But what makes it different compared to other instances of women being raped in comics is Michonne got her revenge. Yes, her scars, her mental scars will be with her forever. But she attacked the governor in a horrible, horrible way. So I think he's showing... You know, he's making the point that, yes, rape is bad. Rape is something that we have to live with in our society, and this is something that you still have to worry about at the end of the world.
He is doing a fictional book, but he's trying to bring realism to it. Exactly. And the other thing, too, is Michonne's a strong female character,
too. She's a very strong female character.
So she'll get attacked like that, but then, like you said, she comes back, she gets her revenge on the character, and that doesn't make it okay.
No, not at all. I'm not saying that at all.
But it does make it where it's...
You're like, yes,
she's not
a
victim.
She got it. That's fine. She
did
it. Yeah, she was able to attack him. She got back at her rapist, which is a lot of things that a lot of times women don't get that sort of justice when they're raped.
They never do.
What's the stat? Like one out of
15 out of 16 men who commit rape never go to jail.
That's disgusting.
That's what I see. I don't even know how many times a week someone comes in, he's still out there. You know, and they never see justice. What I think Kirkman does is he's making a social commentary. He's commenting on the nature of humanity, where you have really good ethical characters that get lost, like Rick, or you have these guys that just are kind of evil innately and just do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I think he was making a statement that attacking Michonne is, she's the power source in that group.
Because Rick already lost his hand at that point.
Yeah, at the point in the book, I don't know how far you are in it, John. Michonne's really...
I'm up to the last hardcover, so...
Oh, so you're... Yeah, you've
I'm
got
around
it
issue
all.
100.
Okay. Yeah, but it's like she was the anchor in that group. Yeah. And that's, you know, going back to Mark Millar, what he was saying is he wasn't defending a particular instance where he used rape. You know, he was saying, oh, I'm just telling you that a guy's a bad guy. And it's like, okay, Dr. Doom's a bad guy, but we ain't never had Dr. Doom rape Sue Storm. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me ask you guys this, because I think you've given two really good extremes about where it was handled well in Walking Dead and where it's handled badly in Wanted or Kick-Ass. How do you guys feel about Identity Crisis when Brad Meltzer handles Dr. Light
that?
And Sue Dibney?
Yeah.
She read it. I haven't, but I know all about it. We've talked about it.
You know, my problem with rape in those kind of instances is that it's the point of it is to get at the male counterpart, the male character.
Yeah.
It's used as a weapon against the male, not also in Sons of Anarchy. There's a whole scene where Gemma gets raped and she makes the decision not to tell them because
Look at you talking about Sons. You don't even watch it.
You made me. Shut up. But the point was that it's used as a vehicle to harm the male.
I didn't even
I didn't think about that.
So
in a way, it's a villain going, I fucked with your stuff.
Exactly. Right. It's, oh, look, I'm touching your toys. So, there's an
objectification in it as well. Where it's not, it's not about the character who's getting
it. Not at all. It's not about how it affects
the male who's the, who's the main
character.
Because
even Dr. Light, he explains it afterwards. They catch him and he says, oh, Flash, I see a wedding ring under your glove. Like, I bet you got somebody special at home. And it's, you know,
insinuating that he's going to do the same thing.
He'll go after
Wally's
Flash's wife, and it's the same thing. It's like, oh, you've got a house? I'm going to go burn your house down.
Yeah. Like, oh,
to get at you.
Here's your brand new toy. I'm going to break it in half.
Hey, that is my brand new toy.
I won't break it, I swear.
It's
so what you're saying is that supervillains should be raping superheroes themselves.
Yes.
Yes.
That's
actually,
Joker should just rape Batman and not beat Robin with a crowbar.
No, I actually thought
Jason
of that this
probably
morning.
Kind of
if Mark Millar wants to go for the shock value, rape a male character. Where is that?
Carl.
Yeah.
There are there are tons of male characters out there. Male guys get raped too. So what I think another point that Tina made was that Kirkman does it differently because Carl almost gets raped too. So Kirkman's not using it in the same way that Mark is. You know, Kirkman, just as easily as Michonne was raped, Carl comes very close to being raped.
And
too.
I'm not trying to put Kirkman on this pedestal. I mean, I love Kirkman, but I have some issues with Kirkman as well, especially recently. But I think there is a difference. You can, I don't want to say you're doing rape in a tasteful manner because that's disgusting. But I think you can approach it if you're making a commentary about our society. There are women out there reading comics and they could have been raped. I'm sure someone out there reading a comic.
They can connect to Michonne in those feelings that she goes through.
Because a lot of women probably would like to find their rapist and do what Michonne did to the governor, if not worse.
And I think as far as somebody who's writing comics, if you're going to write about, they always say, write what you know. Mark Millar doesn't know anything about rape. He doesn't know what it's like. I don't know.
Unless he's a closet rapist or something.
Right. But that's what I'm saying is like, you know, he also doesn't know anything about running around being Superman. But it's like, I can put myself in the point of view of maybe having superpowers and wanting to help people and write a Superman story, sure. But rape is such a complex thing that I'll probably never understand. It's like, why? There's 100 billion things to write about. Why do you have to write about that when you don't know anything about it? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter, you know, how much research you've done or how much people you've talked to. If you've never experienced that, especially when it's such a crazy hard thing, you should not be writing about that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying ignore it, but it's like, what are you...
Or reevaluate the way you're writing about it.
Yeah.
Instead of having this guy rape somebody in every issue, why don't you focus on the person who's being raped? Why don't you talk about what sort of impact that has on that person or what sort of impact it has on this guy who's just going around raping people?
Yeah, because what's the thing in Wanted? It's in like the first or second issue, the character... He's like, oh, I raped an A-list celebrity this week, and it didn't even make the papers. And it's like, okay, your hero of the story just raped a person, bragging about it and how he got away with it, and that's their title character. It's like, what kind of book are you writing? Like, why does that need to be in a comic book?
My whole problem with Mark Millar, just stylistically, I feel like he's trying to be Garth Ennis without the sense of humor.
Yeah.
Because Garth Ennis goes to some really dark places, but a book like Preacher... is first of all really smart, really, really funny, and it has a balance.
Yeah,
you know where the good characters are virtuous,
and that's the thing.
Mark Millar is kind of just everybody's depraved, and that was the most disappointing thing about Kick-Ass because Jeremy Jr. is one of my favorite artists ever.
Yeah,
he finally gets a chance to do something creator owned, and I don't want
to
read it.
And it's vile. And that's going back to Garth Ennis. You know, he's writing a book like Punisher, where you know the title character, same thing, is running around murdering people. You don't want that to be a title character, but he's clearly showing that the people he's murdering are like the scum of the scum. So even his most depraved or whatever heroic character is at least taking out the trash. You know what I'm saying?
Like, well, Dexter, like you can get behind a character like that because there's some motives there.
Right.
Well, and like, I'm not saying you can't go to dark places and you can't talk about rape or you can't talk about, you know, people being murdered, like innocent people being murdered. You can do that. But if that's your entire story is just people being raped.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I don't know. I have not read Wanted. I don't want to read Wanted because rape standards is just terrifying to me. Horrifying. And I can't deal with that. So it's like, I don't understand. What sort of place do you mentally have to put yourself in that you're going to write that day in and day out. Yeah, not just like once in a while.
Authority. I just read a news article this morning about him to, you know, just kind of wrap my head around like exactly what was said, what was the context, you know.
Yeah.
And it's prevalent in all of his works. You know, the only thing I can think of that I've read of his that doesn't have that would be Red Son.
Yeah.
Wolverine.
Or he worked on the Ultimates.
I don't think it comes up in Ultimates.
You know, but I know he's kind of known for twisting things and turning them upside down on their heads. But, you know, rape is not the vehicle for that. If you're going to do a rape story, it should be part education and following that character to describe like kind of what happens and
how they deal with it.
Yeah. Right. Like the Garth Ennis, we talked about, you know, comparing him to Mark Millar. He did that Punisher story called The Slavers. And it's about this crazy Russian or Eastern European gang that brings like women, human trafficking. They're trafficking women in. And there's a scene where Punisher gets a hold of one of these women that's leading it. She's like the head of the family and he's in a skyscraper and he's like throwing her up against a window that is supposed to be unbreakable. And he's like, these windows, they give out eventually. I just have to do this repeatedly. And he's repeatedly throwing her against this window, trying to kill her. And he's just said, it's been a long time since I wanted to kill somebody this bad. So it's like, even Punisher, who kills drug dealers and murderers and all these other terrible people, it hates what these people are doing with this like human trafficking stuff. So it's like, he's doing this story. He's showing us that human trafficking is a thing, which happens. I don't know what the statistics are, but it's a thing that's happening that no one talks about.
And it's happening in this country.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's happening in our country.
And he's showing that and showing on a level like, okay, this is worse than drug dealers. This is worse than murderers. This, you know, or not maybe worse, but you know what I mean? It's like the same horrible level of terror.
Yeah.
And there's definitely ways to handle it. It's just, like I said, it's Mark Millar is almost like glorifying it where he's like with the wanted.
Yeah. I feel like each instance of rape in a Mark Millar book could be just swapped out with murder.
Yeah.
But I feel like
why
he's going,
does it have to be rape?
Because rape, it has more of a reaction than murder. I mean,
it's a headline grabber.
Obviously murder is a horrifying thing, but it's such embedded into the action genre that you're like,
people get
that guy died.
All the time.
Yeah.
That doesn't make it okay, but it's like you said, it's murders. I think it's a different thing. And, you know, I'm not a philosopher or whatever, but it's like, there's definitely levels of it. And like, people have to live with rape. People have to live with, you know, family members being murdered or something, but like, it's such a prevalent thing in fiction, going all the way back to like, offend whoever you want, the Bible. Like, there's that's like
right.
The
Cain
fucking
killed Abel.
First story in the Bible is murder. So it's, and that's one of the oldest stories. So I'm just saying, it's just, there's just different levels of ways to handle this. And
there are different layers of rape, because you're not dealing with just, oh shoot, I'm robbing this bank and you saw me, I got to protect myself. It's about power and control and exerting that and dominating someone else.
And you're targeting a specific portion of our world. You're targeting women. I mean,
and you know what? That's a point I wanted to get to, because you mentioned that about that women might be reading these books that have been raped. One, the other comments were some of the things that, say, Len Wein and Jerry Conway and Todd McFarlane said, which when we talked about on the podcast seemed just very out of date. Because there was mostly guys who came to prominence in the 70s when there weren't a lot of women reading comics. But they were basically just saying, yeah, we don't write to women because women don't read comics and it's a boy's fantasy.
And I think
I am a woman and I read comics.
Yeah. I wanted to give your impression on that. If
weird, out of touch thing to say.
Very out
because
of touch.
Because, Tina, I know you started reading comics recently, though,
yes,
like the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But Lisa introduced me to comic books. We didn't have... You took us to our first comic book store. So like, me and Michael only read comics because Lisa picked up comic books. So it's like, very clearly, probably since comic books are being made, women have been reading comics.
Maybe they are not the majority. I'm sure the majority are men, and I'm not disagreeing with that. But I'm sure, you know, today in 2013 and not 1953, there are a lot of women who are reading comics. I mean, when they first came out, you know, in the 1930s or 40s or 50s, it was geared towards young boys. Young boys were reading comics, but today that's not at all the case.
Now, do you feel that comics are speaking to you, though, at least, or do you
sometimes, you know, there's some really good story arcs and I'm like, finally this story is being told. I loved Gotham Central because of the storyline they did with Renee Montoya.
And that was Rucker, right?
Yeah.
Rucker and Brubaker writing together.
Yeah, and they made a huge deal about boosting up Renee Montoya, who, if I'm not mistaken, that's a Bruce Timm from the cartoon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she made the leap with Harley Quinn into
The comics,
universe, and yeah. she might as well have been the title character. Right. And not only was she a woman, she's gay. So it's like...
And Latina.
Yeah. She's got, three minority groups she's now fulfilling that was a previously unheard
voice. And now she's the question, so now she's a superhero.
She's a major character now, and I just think it's...
But is she the question now?
She got lost in New 52.
Hi, New 52. So, hi, Renee.
I'm still pissed because she's one of my favorite characters.
No, there is. Trinity War.
Trinity War.
There is a question, but I'm pretty confident it's a guy.
I want Renee
Montoya back.
Agreed. Let's petition.
At least back as a police officer.
Yes.
Well, and I think she was a good female character because... She's strong. She wasn't a superhero, so she's not wearing skimpy outfits, but she... She's kind of like the Michonne of the DC universe. Is kind of how I see it. They don't exploit her. She's very strong, level-headed, competent. She was the driving force of that whole story arc, you know. And then we had that good storyline with her and Two-Face. So I think she's...
Yeah, it was a lot of no man's land.
Yeah.
What's about
no, she's a big player.
And to the point where it's like she was standing in almost for Batman as his equal slash nemesis throughout that story, which was really interesting. And it wasn't the same... And that's what I liked so much about it. It wasn't like Two-Face, they had this like weird romance thing. They had a weird relationship, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm in love with the bad guy. It was like, we have a weird relationship because he...
It's kind of creepy at times, but because
he's a lunatic. But right. Like, it wasn't just, oh, he's my evil boyfriend. It's like, no,
I'm not sure what he is.
I think what they connected was that, you know, Renee does go to these dark places as a character. I think she's pretty well developed. So she's always fighting for justice, but she's got her own demons, her own drinking issue and all that stuff. So I think it was kind of, they were playing on her own light and dark, good and evil. And that's why we match it up with Two-Face.
Because
that makes sense.
But it was nice that it just wasn't what you would, like, your stereotypical, like, good girl, female character. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I love that first story in No Man's Land when it's when Harvey shows up to help dig out survivors.
Yeah.
And Radio doesn't trust him, but like every time he flips the coin, it just happens to come out good.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he's a superhero. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he's
and it's Two-Face, and you're like,
but the coin just never told him to do anything evil, and every time he flipped it, there's this.
That's actually a really good Two-Face though, too, because Two-Face is a good guy when the coin wants him to be, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, she's a great
even
character.
You get writers like, I mean, even now, I mean, Gail Simone is to the point where, you know, she's so popular to where when DC tells her you're off Batgirl, the other big writers at DC march into Dandito's office and say,
you
can't take her off this book. You have to give it back to her. Like, not because...
And Batgirl, it was a book when New 52 came out, you guys had that deal. If you read every number one, you got the absolute Long Halloween. So I read every number one, did not think I was going to stay with Batgirl. I never stayed with a Cassandra Cain Batgirl. I never stayed with any of the limited series because there's only so much Batman you can buy. But I've never missed an issue of Gail Simone's Batman.
I love it.
I love it.
Fantastic.
I like it more than Kyle Higgins' Nightwing.
And again, I'm not saying that because I'm in love with Gail Simone. No, that's not it. It's actually fantastic. It's so good. It's so good.
But that's what's awesome about it is now that there's, you know, there's female writers with the fan base, obviously, that's more than just female readers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Gail Simone's, like, your Jeff Johns and whoever else marched into DC's office to get her job back are fans of her work. They're not like, no, we still need girls. Like, they're,
no, like, they, I mean? apparently her and Jeff Johns are actually really good friends.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's just cool to see where it's, we'll get better stories. We'll get better
You get a different perspective.
Exactly.
Because it's a woman writing it. Well, oh my God, a woman writing about woman issues.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, and even when they write male characters, you know, I probably have a whole run of Nightwing, and I was a big fan of Devin Grayson.
Yes.
On when she was writing Nightwing, and glad to hear she's coming back into comics.
Because Gail's bringing her back.
You know, and I think there should be more female characters because they can still write the male characters. Mm. They share the same love of these characters that...
Yeah, they grew up with Nightwing and Batman and all these other characters. Yep. There's no reason why they can't write them. And that's something where it's like, fucking why not? Greg Rucka's writing, writing Wonder Woman, Greg Rucka,
and,
you know?
And he's doing a fantastic job writing Wonder Woman.
Yeah, so it's like, why not? Like, it just doesn't... Yeah, it's just a weird thing that it's not that it took so long, but that it's such an issue with people that
today.
Oh my God, girls read comics. It's like fucking everyone reads comics. Like,
yeah,
what?
Who cares?
Find me the group of people who don't read comics. Like, it's a weird thing to say.
The greatest thing in the world
this week. Okay, last night I saw World's End. Simon Pegg.
Oh, yeah. Oh. The bar movie, right? With the robots?
How is it? Yeah, it's great.
Really?
Shaun of the Dead is one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Good movie. Shaun of the Dead made me more of a zombie fan.
Yeah, me too.
I was kind of afraid of zombie movies before I saw Shaun of the Dead. And the one part that always bothered me in Shaun of the Dead is when they... when the zombies killed Dylan Moran, the guy from Black Books.
And I didn't know who he was at the time. He was just the annoying guy in the group that got torn in half.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck that guy.
I was so mad when they tore him in half because I was like, we were keeping the violence kind of low.
Yeah.
And now we're in the third act and that guy's intestines are ripped out. And I was really angry.
Yeah.
And then eventually I got desensitized enough to it where I was watching Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
And Night of the Living Dead.
And you see it all.
Oh, I love it.
But Hot Fuzz I didn't like as much. And people,
Hot Fuzz wasn't that good.
See, people love Hot Fuzz.
I don't know why.
But
it's got parts in it I really like, and I like that villain.
Timothy Dalton?
Yeah, the old James Bond.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as good as Shaun of the Dead.
I think the problem I have with it was they were parodying over-the-top violent action movies the way they were parodying zombie movies.
Yeah.
So they were parodying movies like Bad Boys or Clive Owen stuff, you know, Jason Statham type stuff.
Owen. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't like those movies at all.
He's good-looking, and he sounds amazing.
Okay.
But and then Edgar Wright did Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which made me feel old because I don't like it. And everybody's like, "This movie's so awesome to talk to my generation." And I'm like, "I guess
not my generation."
It's not mine.
And I like Michael Cera and I like Edgar Wright. And then Paul was terrible.
I didn't see Paul because I heard it was bad.
It was bad. I was surprisingly bad. So I wasn't
sure about it. I don't know much about it other than it's another world. What's the premise here?
World's End is about guys in their 40s, and Simon Pegg plays this guy who's basically done nothing with his life, and he keeps going back to this fantastic night where they do this thing called the Golden Mile, where they do a pub crawl of 12 pubs in their town in one night.
And don't they have to drink like a pint at every single...
They have to drink a pint at every one. Okay. So they have to drink 12 pints that night.
Wow.
Jesus.
So they
I'd
got
be dead at like
I would
third
throw
bar.
Up
yeah, so
all over.
When they graduated like high school, they got to like pub 9 and passed out. So this is always like this unfinished business. So it's 20 years later and he gets everybody back. It's like Nick Frost and Martin Freeman. So it's great guys and they're all like adults now. They all
Martin
have like
Freeman is the Hobbit, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And Watson on Sherlock.
Yes. I'm just, you know, keeping it real.
So he tells them that they all have to do this again. They don't really want to do it. And they're kind of dragging their feet through it. And then at some point, they realize that the entire town has been taken over by robots.
That's awesome.
And then they... But Simon Pegg still will not stop doing the pub crawl.
That's awesome.
So they find out, like, pub 4 or 5 that the town's taken over by robots.
And he still wants to keep
going. He has to go to the 12th pub.
I'm going
to
go see this
today. It's as good as Shaun of the Dead, and I was not expecting that.
Really?
That's awesome.
It's okay.
Now
really
I kind of
want to
see it.
And it's actually a little deep. It doesn't stop and get sad.
Yeah.
But some of the themes in it talks a good amount about alcoholism.
Yeah.
Really, you don't
yeah.
say.
Wow. And it talks a lot about like middle age and nostalgia. And it was interesting. It had this great counter message to like most American films, where most American films are saying your senior year of high school is the greatest thing ever. You know, all these teen movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this movie was the first movie I've seen in a long time that's like, when you're 40, you should not act like you're in high school.
Right. Mm. Things can still be awesome.
Yeah. And yeah, in fact, things can get better than they did in high school.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. The story kept moving. Pierce Brosnan is in it.
That's
is
awesome.
Is he really? Oh my God. Yes.
Pierce Brosnan is, and Rosamund Pike is in it. And she was the Bond girl in Die Another Day. And in the middle of the movie, I'm like, they just reunited Bond with one of his Bond girls.
That's awesome. I don't even know who that is, but I'm all for that.
Die Another Day is the last Pierce Brosnan movie. The one with the ice castle, the bad
ice
one.
Ice castle and the invisible car.
Yeah, she's the blonde girl in that.
Yeah.
But so she's in this, and she's like, now she's like late 30s, so she looks like, you know, like soccer mom, but she looks great. But I would go as far as to say it was the best movie I saw this summer.
Wow.
And I've been holding Iron Man. I've been holding Iron Man 3 up with its flaws.
Yeah.
And saying, well, nothing's beat this, and I really like it, even though it has flaws. This didn't have those flaws.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Did you see... Oh, you still didn't see Pacific Rim, did you?
No, I saw it.
I wanted to see it. Pacific Rim. Charlie Hunnam's in it.
They did announce... Yeah, he's good.
Oh, my God.
They announced the sequel. They're doing it.
They are doing a sequel. I thought it
finally,
didn't do well enough.
It didn't, but it finally did do enough to where they want to do a sequel, which... Yes. Anything
on that. If Del Toro does it again,
Del Toro
yes.
And
please,
Ron Perlman.
I'll see anything Del Toro makes.
Yeah, there's a How It Should Have Ended Up for that. You should all check out. But my favorite thing of the week, Infinity started last week. It's Hickman's big event for the year. And this is one of those things I'm super excited about, but it's a really complicated story, so I won't go too crazy into it. But basically, if you come into the store and you mention the podcast, and then you have to ask, because people mention the podcast and I forget that I told them I'll give them a free time. You have to, like, as you would a child, you have to ask for the book. You know, you just have to just remind me that I'm promising free comics.
So basically, you said on the podcast.
I need you to say the words, I heard you on the podcast say I get a free comic if I mention the podcast. Say those to me and I'll get you a free comic. I will give you your choice. Avengers number one, which is Hickman and Jerome Opeña's first issue, which starts Hickman's long run on this Avengers stuff, which is glorious. Or Infinity number one, which is $5.99. I'm going to, you know, break the bank doing this.
That's a pricey book.
It is, but it's worth it because it's an oversized book. There's like six chapters to it, and it's kicking off this Infinity, which is going to go through Infinity, six issues, Avengers, and Avengers Assemble are the main titles for it. But it's awesome. They're basically just using Thanos because of the thing at the end of Avengers, but it's Hickman writing it, so you're not going to get like the Bendis level crossover with huge opening, letdown, ending. It's going to be big. It's they're doing things in the Avengers right now that I've always wanted them to do with like an Avengers book, where like the scope is so high and they're actually they're boosting the Avengers up to like the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, where it's like they're now commanding respect in the galaxy. Like, it's not just them focusing on Earth, which is awesome. It's the logical evolution of where the Avengers should be. But it's a really, really cool book, and I'm really behind it, and it's doing really well in sales, so this is one of those like while supplies last kind of thing. But yeah, it's if Dave Navarez was here, he would be raving about this because it is just the greatest fucking book on the shelf right now.
Yeah, I gotta pick it up.
Yeah.
This week going with our theme, women in refrigerators. I had heard that Gail Simone started this in response to Major Force killing Alex DeWitt, you know.
Right, and Green Lantern.
Right, and
I have that issue.
I know, because I want to read it, but I know I don't own it.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of looking into it, and they did develop a whole list of female characters that have been, you know, assaulted or maimed in some form or fashion, just to see, like, what does this mean in comics? Is this a trend that we need to look into? And then Tina further looked into it and found that it's, like, kind of becoming a thing where if a woman is attacked to get at the male counterpart, we're calling it woman in
refrigerator syndrome.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Because like, okay. I think we talked about this before on the podcast where it's like, it's one woman in one fridge, yeah. But it's the idea that and I think Ron Mars, who wrote that, is a great writer. And that Green Lantern stuff is still, and you know, John, I am not a DC guy at all.
No, I love that Green Lantern. My
favorite comics are the Kyle Rayner getting the ring.
Yeah.
Those first couple.
Like 50 to 100. It's
awesome.
That the first five years of that.
Up until, I'd say, like,
great.
The Power Ion stuff, it was really, really on. And I've got all of the issues, Tina, if you want to read them. I've got the single issues for it. It's when I sell all my comics, because I'm going to get rid of them eventually, but I'll keep the hardcovers and stuff, that's the single issues I'm going to keep, because I can't guarantee that DC will ever reprint that in its entirety.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, that took on such a bigger life than it is. I think, like you said, Gail Simone even says, like, look, guys, I know it's only one woman in one fridge,
but
it's
what the idea does this mean?
Exactly.
What does it mean?
That character, Alex DeWitt, was introduced to get killed to show how inexperienced Kyle is at his job at being Green Lantern. He'd been Green Lantern for like a week.
Right.
And his girlfriend got killed. And it's like, it's the same thing when they did Giant Size X-Men and they came up with all these international X-Men. One of them was introduced to die to show you not every superhero is going to live. And they had Thunderbird.
Yeah.
Well, I think they did that with Damian Wayne too. You know,
Grant had designed him to die.
Yep. Right. Yep. And it's that's fine, but those are superheroes getting killed doing superhero stuff.
Right.
Not a woman girlfriend who just happens to know a guy and gets stuffed in the refrigerator to get at the hero.
Well, I think it's just a catchy thing. You know, women in refrigerators, you automatically draw.
Because it sounds weird.
It does. It's like, really what does that mean? You're trying to picture what that looks like. And I think it's just a really cool way it grabs people's attention to let them know that this is an issue.
Yeah.
You know, we're not sure what it means. And Gail even says on the website, you know, women in refrigerators, that she doesn't know what it means. She's putting the question to people. Mm-hmm. And I guess she got a little bit of backlash back in the day because she started this probably 98 right after the run.
Yeah, before she was a professional writer.
Right. And, you know, she got some flack from other guys. Well, what is this? Who cares what it means? It's one woman. But I think it's
flack from guys.
Right. It's extreme in being an example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's just something cool to kind of look into and notice what is the trend of female characters in comics today.
Yeah.
Very cool. My greatest thing is I'm a little late to jump on the bandwagon. However, I just discovered Doctor Who, and I am now addicted to it. I've reached a new level of nerddom.
Yay. That's a level of nerddom I'm not even going to.
I know. Yet.
Well, it's funny because this week we both started thinking we should watch this. So I actually watched like two episodes
without
before
me.
I told Tina, like, and I was like, oh my God, I wanted to watch it. How could Doctor you do Who? This?
But yeah, so I did not watch the first season. I started with David Tennant, who I am now madly in love with, and who will forever be Barty Crouch Jr. to me, because Harry Potter always comes first. And I think we're about on episode like 8 or 9 of his run, and it is fantastic. And
there's, in his first season.
Yes. His first season just started. They're right now with the Ood. If you remember the Ood, the Odd Ood.
The Odd Ood.
Yeah. The Ood come back a few times. They even come
Everybody seems to come back. It's,
Even Matt Smith has an episode with an Ood in it.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So yeah, they establish themselves as like a race.
Oh, that sounds cool. Yeah. But yeah, so I am completely and already addicted, as I do with Netflix shows. And I would be burning through the seasons much quicker, but I'm being a nice person and waiting for Lisa to watch
Good
the
girlfriend.
Episodes.
Good girl.
I try.
But the background on her phone is keep calm and get in the TARDIS.
Yes, it is.
That's awesome.
So yes, even though I'm not big on the whole keep calm thing, but I saw it and was like, yeah, okay, we're going to do this now. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, as always, you can follow me at Not In My Book. That is the Caffeinated Comics Twitter handle. Like us on Facebook. We're getting more. I love every person I don't know who likes our Facebook page.
Usually it says like this person, friends with John Clark, likes Caffeinated Comics.
I'm I got like 80 out of the 160. I have like half the people.
There you go.
And there are a lot of people that I don't see anymore because they're friends of family in
New
York.
Or whatever. Yeah.
So I like the fact that a lot of them are listening because then I get to talk and I don't have to listen to them.
Oh, there you go. It's like you're getting everything out of the relationship you want.
It's win-win. Tina, I know you're active on Facebook.
I am active on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle, or whatever you call it, is Tina Smash. So you can find me on there. I tweet lots of things. Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes it's just me ranting like a lunatic. So
that's what Twitter's for, I think.
I think so.
I think so. I actually have a Twitter, but I just don't have time to be on there. I don't have a smartphone. I text. That's about it. But
so text Lisa.
Yeah,
text her.
You can reach her. I'll give her one.
But if you are interested in my Twitter, which has nothing on it, you can find me at Menomina 83 through John or Tina.
Yeah, I have you. And Steven?
I'm at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois, in the real world.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Damn!